Stay tuned for The Cinema Clash, as Maryland-based critics Charlie Jewell and Hannah Buchdahl debate the merits of new releases, from the mainstream movies that Hannah tends to favor to obscure foreign films that Charlie likes to champion. It's free-flowing, unedited conversation with an occasional wine wager. Two very different perspectives, one entertaining podcast. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net, joined remotely yet again by my notorious co-host, Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com. Hey there, Charlie.
Oh, I like the notorious one, and the listeners will figure out in about three films why you set us up with the notorious co-host, so thank you very much. I appreciate it. I'm actually in a psychedelic mood. Psychedelic, drinking my Malbec. I just finished listening to the remastered 17 minutes and 4 seconds of Inagata DeVita. I can see you on video right now, and I can see your face. Like, you just made a face that just like, why would you do that to yourself? What do you mean, why not? You don't want 1968's Iron Butterfly's magnum opus Inagata DeVita in your mind right now?
Does that actually have anything at all to do with any of the films we're about to talk about?
You see, this is why we can't have nice things. All right, how about this? Here, I had a different lead-in, but that music was fresh on my mind. How film affects current politics. Representative Steve Cohen of Tennessee just reintroduced a bill to strip J. Edgar Hoover's name off of his building, off of the FBI building. Why? Because he saw Judas and the Black Messiah, and he said, wow, your name got to go. How about that, Hannah, for film affecting current politics?
Oh, that's great. He didn't see any of the other like 500 films about J. Edgar Hoover that we did in the past year and a half to
kidding. He could have
draw the same conclusion.
Any other film. Apparently he had done this back in 2015 the first time when he saw a documentary about how old J. Ed went after homosexuals to ferret them out of the federal government. And when he saw that, he first introduced this bill. Now he has reintroduced this bill. It's got a dozen co-sponsors, probably going to go nowhere, but way to go, Judas and the Black Messiah. Go get them. Go get them.
All right. So moving on from politics into our first film.
Yes. I can't believe, though, I'm going to say you have glossed over Iron Butterfly. That's fine. I'm going to get you again next week with something even more off the wall. I'm going to get you. All right, let's talk about the films. This week's biggest film, and it's called Cherry. It's this week's biggest film because it's got your boy, Tom Holland. This is another example of Tom Holland saying, hey, I am more than this prepubescent-faced child that you know from the Marvel Cinematic Universe's Spider-Man. Look at me branch out. We just talked about him last week in Chaos Walking. And that was filmed a million years ago and just released. Cherry filmed more recent, and he still looks like a baby, even though he says he's trying. It looks like he's got some peach fuzz now on his upper lip. But Cherry was this lower middle class kid, Cleveland, Ohio, and they shot this in Cleveland. And if I lived in Cleveland, I would have done what he did and gotten the hell out of Cleveland. What a miserable looking city, by the way. Sorry from all our listeners from Cleveland. Good Lord.
Cleveland people love their city, and it's got the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, so you should be okay with it.
I have nothing for it. Well, I have a lot against it. It looks like garbage. But Cherry.
I like Cleveland. For the record, I like Cleveland. Okay,
oh,
continue.
Look at you trying to stop the hate mail we're about to get from all the Clevelandites. Drew Carey. There you go. Drew Carey. That's all I know about. Cleveland rocks. Cherry gets out of college. He drops out of college to join the army because, well, A, he was heartbroken. He met this girl. He met the girl, Emily, played by a wonderful new actress. I had not seen her before. Sierra Bravo is her name. He meets her in college. They start some up. She gets squirrely. She says, I'm moving to Montreal. He says, fine, I'm going to enlist in the army. At the beginning of the Iraq War, by the way, so not a good time to enlist in the army. And then she says, oh, no, wait a minute. I'm not going to move to Montreal. We should stay together. And he's like, baby, I already signed on the dotted line. So she says, okay, I'll wait for you. Cut to montage basic training. Wow, that looks awful. By the way, basic training is awful. Cut to Iraq. He's a medic. He has a very rough time. Cut to back to Cleveland. He's got PTSD. He's got survivor's guilt. He's got opioids. He's got a drug problem. He robs banks to fulfill the drug problem. There's a lot going on in this movie. It is based on a semi-autobiographical novel by Nico Walker. Nico is saying it's dramatized, but this is pretty much what happened to me. It was directed by somebody you know, big directors, Anthony and Joe Russo. You know them from Captain America, Winter Soldier, Captain America, Civil War, Avengers Infinity War, Avengers Endgame. Really, all the really good adventure film, the Russo brothers directed them. They're from Cleveland. It shows. For some reason, Cherry has been nominated for like the year's top editing award by the editors, because it's weird because everyone's like, Cherry? Like, no one really likes this film. Nobody. It's really long. It's a tough watch at times. And I even have a hunch that I liked it better than you did. And I'm not, here I am, not even like glowing about it.
It would not take much. I watched it. I got through it because I believe around, what was it, a week or two ago, I almost felt like you challenged me to watch this film, mostly because also you brought up one particular shot.
Do you remember what shot that was?
I do. It had something to do with a scope during the physical exam for basic training, if I recall. And I was like, that's it? That was the shot that you remembered from this film?
Yeah, that was a very iconic, memorable shot.
It would have blown right by me. And as I said, if you've ever had a colonoscopy, it won't faze you.
I have not had a colonoscopy.
Obviously. So I didn't give it all that much consideration. My problem with this film is I just felt that it was trying to just be too many things. And it was just, after 5 minutes, I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to make it through this movie. After 10 minutes, I'm like, I really don't want to keep watching this movie. But I kept watching, thinking, well, maybe it'll get better because I like the Russo brothers. I love Marvel. Tom Holland, gotta love, hey, Spidey, Peter Parker. I wanted to give it a chance and try and be fair. But I just did not like it at all. It just was one of those movies where it's trying so hard to be artistic that I think it ends up alienating most of a mainstream audience. And so just disappointing. For me, Cherry was the pits. What more can I say?
Oh, good Lord. Maybe that's because it's an alienating subject matter. I mean, this is really about present day still problems, real problems. The opioid epidemic is still amongst us, and he was, I guess, riding the first wave of that. You have these Veterans Administration doctors saying, have you heard of OxyContin? And they're just shoving it down his throat. So technically, not his fault he got addicted, but probably his fault that he got his girlfriend, fiance, person addicted. I can see why this alienates people, and it really, it's too long. It's 141 minutes, and good Lord, I was really ready for this to end. And it's just so segmented. You have young guy before he goes to war, boot camp. It doesn't really need to be there. I guess it just, maybe that's the transition from nobody into somebody when he just transitions into the army, but it's funny to watch the way they cut it, the way they shot it, just the absurdity of it. I laughed, but it actually doesn't really need to be in there. They could have just cut to Iraq, I think. And he has a very rough time there. He makes really good friends with a guy. Something might happen to that guy. And as a medic, you know, he's the one who sees the intestines outside of the body. You know, remember that from like Saving Private Ryan's beginning scenes? We see that again, the spaghetti intestines. So this is really about things. It's really about current, real problems. It's just so
I get
overdrawn.
That, but the whole turning into a bank robber, and then I'll tell
Which
you
is
where
real.
I
he did.
But where I absolutely lost it was the attempt. I'm like, how long was he supposed to be in prison when to grow that mustache? If you can even call it that. I was like, my brother is a teenager, like spent 10 years trying to grow a level of mustache of that caliber.
It's Tom
which
Holland.
Still was a major fail. And so it was it automatically for me wins the cinematic award for the worst mustache that I've seen on film in a very, very, very long time.
All right. Well, I think we've got a Skip It from Hannah on Cherry, and I say, and it's on Apple TV+. It was in theaters, so like 2 weeks ago it was in theaters, since no one really is kind of going to theaters, and if they did, they weren't going to see Cherry anyway. You can now stream it on Apple TV Plus. I say it's not terrible. It's really not. But you gotta want it. All right, let's cleanse our palates. Let's talk about lovely little family films. I saw one. You saw one. Let's start with the one I saw. It is streaming on HBO Max. I saw it last Saturday night on movie night with my kid. Let's talk about Tom and Jerry. Oh my God, Tom and Jerry's terrible. Oh my God, Tom and Jerry's terrible. It's one of those real actors, real life, and they're kind of acting around cartoon characters, which are drawn in later after the action. We've got Chloe Grace Moretz. We've got Michael Pena and Colin Jost. You remember in the cartoons, Tom and Jerry just kind of fought, and it was nobody's fault. A lot of times, okay, you could say it was Tom's fault, kind of an instigator. He didn't have any patience with the little mouse. Here it's Jerry's fault. Like, Jerry kicks it off. He's a busker. He's just trying to make a buck. And Jerry's, you know, taking over his spot, stealing his money. Yeah, Jerry's a little thief in this movie. They both end up moving into this really high-class, five-star hotel, and they're getting ready for this huge celebrity wedding. Colin Jost and the bride. I don't remember her name, nor should I have to remember her name. And hijinks ensue. Poor Chloe Grace Moretz. Cat and mouse got to save the day. It's just a garbage film. It's all over the, like, people are tweeting about this. Like, this is really one of the worst movies to come down in a long time. It's very popular. Everybody's watching it because, you know, they want to put their kids in front of a film. It's directed by Tim Story. He did that 2005 first version of the Fantastic Four. He did Barbershop, if you remember Barbershop. He did Taxi, both ride-alongs with Ice Cube and Kevin Hart. So he knows his way around. Like, he can make a Hollywood film, not necessarily a good Hollywood film, but this, I don't even know what anybody was thinking here. The story is ludicrous. The acting is terrible. Tom and Jerry are terrible. This is all around terrible film, Hannah.
Well, and that's interesting and not surprising because we did not get a screener. We were not given access to it in advance. Nobody was. Nobody that I have heard from has liked this movie. It was just one of those ones that, other than trying to draw kids in with the commercials, I just don't think there was any buzz at all generating about it. And like you say, it's just out there, and it was just hoping to capture enough people before the word of mouth would get out about why you should not, the word of mouth would get out, who moved my cheese. And so I don't know, it just, it's one that I had zero interest in seeing. Luckily, I had no reason to see it. And I think if we're okay with moving on, I can move on to the one that actually is a decent enough family-friendly film worth seeing, which is Yes Day on Netflix. So if you've got Netflix and you've got kids, you want a family movie, you know, night going, Yes Day, who can say no to Yes Day? It's harmless. It's, you know, it's really about the boundaries of responsibility, but also the joys of embracing the sort of can-do mindset within reason. And so it stars Jennifer Garner, alias Babe, Edgar Ramirez, and they play this couple, Allison and Carlos. And they were this, you know, pair that always said yes to everything when they were dating and when they were young. And then they become parents, and suddenly everything was nope, no, no, no. And so they have three kids, you know, from like, I don't know, like ranging in age from maybe like 7 to 16 or something. And the kids are like, you know, mom's a dictator. And they kind of out her parent-teacher night. The parents kind of get outed. The kids are like, you know, they say no to everything and it's ridiculous and they don't trust us. And so the parents who thought they were always like fun parents are just sort of given this wake-up call. And then somebody tells them about this Yes Day movement. And it's where you give the kids 24 hours and you just say, for 24 hours, within a few limits, we will say yes to everything. And just to up the stakes, mom makes a bet with the teenage daughter, Katie, played by Jenna Ortega, and says, you know, if she lapses and says no even once, Katie can go to this Fleek Fest concert without mom as a chaperone. And that's really what, you know, that's what this all hinges on. And H.E.R. Her is performing at Fleek Fest. And so that sets up your dramatic stakes, because come on, you got to have some stakes going.
Doesn't
in
sound
this
that dramatic.
Film. I say that a little facetiously, but it's based on a book as well. So this one's based on a book by Amy Krauss Rosenthal. And I guess this has really become sort of a real thing, a real movement, this Yes Day. And it's really just a concept that celebrates family bonding, wish fulfillment, you know, bending the rules. It's about like eating ice cream for breakfast, riding roller coasters all day, doing a bunch of silly things, playing hooky from work and school to spend quality time with your loved ones. And even if they often drive you nuts. And so that's really the premise. And all I know is that I came out of this one going, this was way better than The War with Grandpa, if you're going to have a movie that's sort of built around family shenanigans. It's got charm. And all I was thinking at the end was, no matter what your age is, we should all give ourselves a Yes Day at least once a month. So are you in, Charlie?
I don't think I have a choice. I think it's going to be tomorrow night's Saturday night movie night family film. I don't think so. I am going to end up seeing it. I'm not that excited to see it. I think the premise is pretty schlocky. You know, you think it's just,
I love schlock.
I don't know if it's quality time as opposed to, oh my God, let's get through this with all 10 fingers and 10 toes time. I don't know. It sounds smarmy.
No, it's totally endearing in it. And, you know, I think it's just a great concept, and I like the concept, and I think that it's the idea is worth embracing. And just being able to sort of be like, you know, wait a minute, we don't have to take ourselves all that seriously. There's a way to have fun and to embrace some of this stuff without
pre-COVID, relinquishing, yes, pre-COVID.
Pre-COVID, without relinquishing total responsibility to your children. And of course, the kids learn at the same time while the parents are learning what they can sort of allow the kids to do. The kids are learning that it's not so easy. There's a reason mom and dad.
See,
it's
like this TGIF must-see TV, Full House, Family Matters moral. Oh my gosh, the parents have it rough too. I guess we should have empathy on all sides and realize what it would feel like to walk a mile in the other person's shoes.
Oh, heaven forbid, Charlie.
Smarmy.
Heaven forbid we have one of those movies.
We always have one of those movies.
PTSD.
We have 17 of those movies a year.
No, we don't.
It is a very standard moral. We don't have the colonoscopy shot 17 times a year, Hannah.
No. And there's a reason for that. And that's why you're there to watch those movies. And I am here to tell you that it's okay to choose Yes Day over a film like Cherry or the documentary that you made me watch.
Speaking of, all right, let's. I didn't make you watch that, by the way. I told you I watched this documentary, and on your own merit, on your own initiative, you went to watch it as well, probably just so we could have the conversation we're about to have. Hannah, there, it's not that big. And, you know, if you look at all the time humans have been alive, we are not that different age-wise. We're not. But this is about to expose that we are a little bit different. You acquire your musical taste in a certain period of your life, usually preteen, early teenage, middle teenage, high school years. Your musical taste gets set in stone. I grew of age in the 90s, especially the mid 90s. That's why I'm a grunge guy. That's why my favorite bands are Pearl Jam and Radiohead. But at the same time, I also acquired a very strong taste for hip hop. It became very popular back then. You know, in the 80s, it was still a subgenre. It was over there. Like, you knew it was there. But it wasn't mainstream. But in the 90s, hip hop became mainstream because certain very visible individuals upped the game. It became saturated pop culture, especially East Coast versus West Coast. West Coast, Tupac, Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg, NWA. East Coast, the guys who always, you know, we started hip hop. Nas, Jay-Z, they didn't start it, but that's who was big in the 90s. And the subject of this documentary, the notorious B.I.G., Christopher Wallace. We are talking about Biggie, colon, I Got a Story to Tell. So I latched on to the notorious B.I.G.'s music in the 90s. You did not. Therefore, that's why I and anyone like me would connect with this documentary. We know of him. We grew up with his music. And you look at this documentary and be like, what? How can, well, A, how can anyone listen to this music? You know, music stopped in 1968 with Inagata DeVita. And, you know, B, why would you be interested in this guy from the border of Bed-Stuy and Clinton Hills in Brooklyn? The reason this documentary is different is because every time you see his biopic, Notorious, or the documentaries that have already been made, it's about his beef with Tupac and his murder. This is not. This is about the home movies that was shot of him growing up on the block, getting his feet underneath him, people realizing the genius of his flow and his early concerts when he grew up big. Puff Daddy's in here. The members of Junior Mafia are in here. I didn't love the documentary. It didn't break any new ground. If you're a hardcore fan, and I'm not, I'm a fan. I'm not a hardcore fan. I learned things, but if you're hardcore, you already know this. Like, there's nothing new. But it was really good just to get into the music and see how it changed pop culture in the 1990s, Hannah.
Well, you have to care about this music and the genre to really care about this documentary. And you have to sort of have, like you say, be familiar with Biggie, Notorious B.I.G., Notorious Big, and all the different variations of
Biggie
his
Smalls.
Name. Biggie Smalls, but then he was sued for using Biggie Smalls, so no more Biggie Smalls. But, you know, and he was very young. He was killed, like, I think he was 24 in 1997. And I remember hearing about his death. You know, it was like first you had, was it Tupac who was shot? And then you had a year later or something, you had, you know, Biggie getting shot and killed. And so, you know, I mean, this is a R-rated documentary. It's also on Netflix. It's, you know, laced with profanity because that's really what his hip hop music was.
You would identify with his mom. She's like, I listened to it
yes,
once.
His mom and his mom, who was like, I raised him on country Western music. And I'm like, yeah, hello. Why didn't you do that? And then he had like the neighbor who was a jazz musician who talked about how, you know, how Biggie had actually really good, you know, had some chops when it came to jazz and stuff. And so I'm like, you know, he'd still be alive today if he had chosen a different genre. So it was just, you know, it was another one where there's the drug dealing and the, and just the, just that, you know, life in the hood kind of thing going on. And I just, it was not, it wasn't my thing back then, this music. It's not my thing now. So I watched it really because, you know, we have another movie coming up that will sort of deal tangentially with this. So I wanted to just kind of set my base because I have not watched any of the other documentaries or really any of the stuff that dealt with Biggie's murder. Unsolved murder. But what was most interesting to me is that I did not realize, because I think this was before I lived in LA, but I lived about maybe a mile and a half from where he was shot. So I was like, I recognize that near the Peterson Auto Museum, near Fairfax and Third. So to me, that was the exciting part. But yeah, just again, you have to really be into rap and hip hop to appreciate this documentary, and it just is not my thing.
I think you are correct. You do have to have an affinity for it to really latch on to the documentary, but you know, it's also about what Brooklyn neighborhoods looked like in the 1990s. The crack epidemic was still an ongoing problem, and he, you know, just like any other kid growing up on the stoops in Brooklyn, that was kind of their only option. He's like, you know, you're either a student getting good at school, or you're going to start earning some cash selling crack. And, you know, his music reflected the reality of what he grew up in, maybe, which is why people heard some authenticity in his voice. It's a good primer, because next week we're going to talk about a movie called City of Lies, starring Johnny Depp and Forrest Whitaker, about the murder investigation into the Notorious B.I.G. And I already know a lot about that. And I think, Hannah, you're about to learn a lot about that. If it's not overly dramatized and fictionalized, we haven't seen it yet. I'm trying to be empathetic, you know, walk in your shoes for a mile. And this is what it would feel like for me if I was forced to watch a 90-minute documentary about Hall and Oates, like I would die.
I'd like, I just don't understand this.
I don't get it.
You'd so be missing out. Did you ever watch the Bee Gees documentary that I told you to watch? See,
no.
So you should have watched that one.
I didn't come. I enjoy some Bee Gees music, but I don't want to watch a Bee Gees documentary. I don't remember the Bee Gees. I didn't grow up with the Bee Gees. I grew up with Biggie. So I don't get to choose.
You are missing out.
When we don't get to choose when we grow up.
That's right. The ones you grow up with all get killed off. My guys are still like, you know, actually though, Andy Gibb did have drug problems, but
and no, Kurt Cobain probably was murdered by his wife, but we haven't proven that yet. All right. The final movie we're going to talk about is one I watched on Hulu the other night that, I don't know if it's going to become a cult classic, but this is one of those movies for a certain type of movie fan. Hannah, recently I've been talking about how much I love the subgenre of time loop movies. So we know Groundhog Day, we know Edge of Tomorrow, we know Happy Death Day, and more recently we know Palm Springs. Boss Level is a time loop movie. Frank Grillo, who the entire movie I thought was Joe Manganiello, ya boy, turns out it was Frank Grillo, wakes up in his bed to a guy with a machete trying to kill him. And, you know, on however many attempts, like his 40th attempts, you know, he figures out, hey, I keep waking up to the guy with a machete. I will learn how to kill him. And, you know, he doesn't know why when he wakes up, wave after wave of assassins keep trying to murder him and murder him weird. Like there's a helicopter outside of his apartment with a very big machine gun that he has to figure out. There's a girl with Adolf Hitler's pistol. There's a guy with a fish hook on the back of his pickup truck spearing him in the chest. There's some brutal methods of death and assassination in this film. And for a long time, our boy does not know why. He's just like, this is terrible. I don't like this. His ex-wife, played by Naomi Watts. Naomi Watts is a scientist. Appears she might have a hand in why this has happened to him, because her evil boss, played by Mel Gibson, who has a speech.
Boy.
He has a speech about how much he hates liberals, which I'm pretty sure probably wasn't in the script, but which made it through. Mel Gibson apparently wants the power that our boy has. There's terrible acting, especially on the part of Frank Grillo. It's poorly written. There's plot holes. There are things that don't add up. But I totally recommend this movie to any action fan because of the mayhem, the things that he has to do to his body throughout the day to make it through to any point in time. The absolute insane chase scenes. Boss Level is trash. It's action trash. It's a B movie / awesome.
Well, I would say I'm not sorry that I missed that, but I caught that other time loop movie a few weeks ago, The Map of Tiny Perfect Things.
Oh, that one, yeah.
And so I'd say, you know, I have a feeling that for a lot of people, The Map of Tiny Perfect Things would be the better option.
But this is going to get like, way more attention.
Unless you like awesome machete murder, killing, slashing over and over and over again.
Yes, learn to become a sword master from Michelle Yeoh. You remember her from Crouching Tiger?
Because
he can't get through a certain part.
It's quite a cast. I mean, I was really amazed.
Kim Jong.
That's kind of surprising when you take that cast with that premise.
Because they read the script and they're like, this is insane. I have to be a part of this. It's directed by Joe Carnahan, who did that A-Team movie remake.
Oh my gosh.
You remember that? And
yes, that was terrible.
He did Narc and Smokin' Aces, which were both awesome, and he did The Gray with Liam Neeson. So he's got a niche, but this one's just like he's gone down a peg, but he's having fun with it. He knows what this is, but he knows that there's a lot of movie fans out there that are just going to have so much fun with this.
Sounds like he carved out a niche for himself in this movie.
And for you football fans, Rob Gronkowski shows up in it.
Oh, Gronk. Wow. So. And unbelievable. All right. Well, I think I will probably take a pass on that one. But if anyone does see it after they finished yelling at you about Cleveland, they can yell at you about that movie.
Come
and
at
maybe
me, Cleveland.
About Cherry.
Come at me. I am worried.
So out of all of the films we've talked about, which one are you recommending to the masses this week?
Biggie. I got a story to tell. But if you just can't handle hip hop or not in the mood for a documentary, Cherry.
All right. And I say yes to Yes Day and no to the rest. All right. Well, I think that'll be a quickie for a quick one for this week. So that's a wrap for this edition of the Cinema Clash. Thanks for listening. As always, if you have a question, a comment, or need to vent to Charlie, which I think you should,
Cleveland,
shoot us a tweet or visit us at thecinemaclash.com. Till next time, wear a mask, watch your distance, wash those hands, and when it is your turn, please take the shot.
The Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell and Hannah Buchdahl is heard twice each weekend at 5:15 on Saturday and 12:15 on Sunday afternoon. Join us again next time for The Cinema Clash.